Strawberries, apples, plums, grapes, cranberries. We are very lucky to live in an area that has so many delicious fruit crops. Hi, Jill Najoe here sitting in for Larry Mueller. With me in the studio is Amaya Atucha, and she is a UW Extension Fruit Crop Specialist and Assistant Professor of Horticulture at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Have you tried growing fruit? Was it successful? What questions do you have about growing fruit? We'd like to hear about it. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send us that email at talk@wpr.org. You can post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Amaya, thank you very much for coming in. Why don't you first tell us what a fruit crop production specialist does?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me in the program. In my position as an extension specialist, we covered and tried to support fruit growers, commercial fruit growers, mainly all over the state for the different fruit crops that we grow. So the most important fruit crop in the state of Wisconsin is cranberries, of course, but we also have big industries growing like grapes, apples, a traditional one. We also have cherries, cherry production, and all sorted of berries. So we work on all of them, doing some research to support commercial growing of these crops. But we also give a lot of educational programming, going to field days with the growers, hearing from them what are the main problems and trying to find solutions and try to make as much as possible information available for them. So we work on newsletters and websites, and we try to gather information from other states, from other specialists, from other researchers besides the research that we do, and we made it available for them.
And you mentioned your website. Now that is new, correct?
Yes, we do have a new website. It's fruit.wisc.edu, and we have there, we constantly update on information on the majority of the fruit crops. A lot of people call us and ask us about some very specific fruit crops that it's hard to find information for, but we try to update as much as possible. And we also have other links to plant diagnostic labs and where they can find information. We usually get a lot of calls with people that tell us they want to send a soil sample, where they can go. And so there's a place where they can find all this kind of information and how can they get answers to them.
I took a look at it, and it's so well done. It's easy to get through, and it's not confusing. So, yeah, kudos for that. Now, besides the website, excuse me, you're also working with a newsletter. You'd mentioned that. Tell us a little bit about that.
So the newsletter, I'm a co-editor of the newsletter with Dr. Christelle Godot from the Department of Entomology. She's also an extension specialist. She's the entomologist, fruit crop specialist, and she's an assistant professor in the Department of Entomology. Both, we came up with this idea that it would be a good way to communicate with growers some pressing issues that happen during the growing season, but also a way to deliver information that we didn't have before, like a new avenue. So we developed this newsletter. It's bi-weekly. Today we have our fourth issue, I think, that we have out there, and we post on almost every, we try to cover the most important fruit crops. So we have a section for cranberries, we have a section for grapes, for tree fruits, and for berries as well. And we put a lot of information of things that are happening, programs that we have, events that we have that people will want to go, news, important things that are happening at the university and in extension. It's a great project.
It's a real useful tool, I think, and not only for those that use it for, like, you know, the production for crops, mm-hmm. what have you, but for the people who've got an apple tree in their backyard.
Yeah, so if anybody's interested in getting the newsletter, you can just go to the website, like I said, fruit.wisc.edu, and you can sign up and you will get automatically the newsletter to your email.
Okay. Well, we've got a few calls coming in, so let's take the first one. Dan in Green Bay, what's your question?
Yeah, good morning. I'm sorry it's getting close to noon and my voice is going.
Me too.
I have two small miniature apple trees in my front yard, and first question is, is it normal for them to bear fruit every other year? And it seems like they never bear fruit in the same year. And then the second question is there a organic method to keep worms off there. We certainly don't want to use pesticides. So those are my two questions.
Hi, Dan. So the first question, if whether the apple trees bear fruit every year, well, they actually do if you manage them. So what happens, what you are experiencing right now is what we call alternate bearing. So it's 1 year in which you have fruit while the next year you don't have. So it's a year on and a year off, we usually call them. And I'm going to explain you why that happens. Apple trees only need 10% of their flowers to set fruit to have a full crop. So let's say, for example, you have 100 flowers in your tree. You only need 10 of them to have a fruit to consider it a full crop because they produce way more flowers than what you actually need. So what happens when you let all of those flowers to set fruit is that each one of those seeds that are growing in the ovaries that are going to produce the fruit are producing a plant hormone that's called gibberellins. And gibberellins are going to inhibit that next year there's a flower being produced in that same structure. So if you have a lot of fruit hanging on your tree, there's a lot of gibberellins being produced, and there's a really big inhibition overall of producing flowers. So the following year, you don't have any flowers. If you don't have any flowers, you don't have any fruits, no seeds, no gibberellins to inhibit those buds to become flowers. So the following year, you have a big bloom. So what can you do? What we do is we thin them. So we remove, you when you look at a blossom, a cluster in apple trees, you'll see usually five flowers, and there's a central flower. It's the biggest flower. We call it the king flower, and it's the one that opens the first and will give you the biggest and highest quality fruit. So when that fruit sets, we remove all of the lateral blossoms. So that way you reduce the amount of fruit that you have in your tree. You get fruit that are big size, and you secure the next year you're also going to have enough flowers to have a consistent crop every other year. So that's what I would recommend you do. We usually do the thinning, the window of the thinning. We try, depending on where you are, I would recommend you to wait until you actually see the fruit starting to grow, the little fruits, because if you do it too early on, even though it has great effects, it's risky because of the frost.
Sure.
So that's my answer. Regarding the organic pesticides for worms, I'm actually not the entomologist. So what I would recommend you to do is go to our website, and I'm sure that we have some information under apples there for control of insects.
Thanks, Dan. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Amaya Atucha. She is a fruit crop specialist with the UW Extension, and we're talking about fruit growing today. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email at talk@wpr.org, and we do have some open lines. And we're going to go to Al in Richfield. Hi, Al.
Hi. Excuse me. Hi. My question, I have a large Bing-style cherry tree, and this year is a bumper crop. And I heard your comments on the first round, and that's good information. I was curious about how to control that, whether I get fruit in 1 year and the next year I don't. My question is, I lose my cherries before I can harvest them with a fungus. They turn real fuzzy looking and black, and I think it's a stone fruit rot, but I'm not sure. What do I do to control that?
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I'm not the expert on plant pathology. You probably have some infection that goes into the blossoms and then actually spread to the fruit itself. I don't have a specific answer for you. I would recommend you also to go to the website and look there. We have a fruit crop pathologist. Her name is Dr. Patricia McManus in the Department of Plant Pathology. She could have answers for that. I usually try not to recommend anything, given that she's the expert, so I refer to them. But what I think that usually happens is when we have rain, we have wet days during full bloom, that's generally when we get these pathogens inside the blossoms, and then they just propagate and they go into the fruit. So she will probably recommend you some spray that you can do during bloom time. Regarding the bumper crop, it's a little bit different from cherries. We actually don't thin them. What probably is happening is that you might be having some years with a lot more of a spring frost, and so some years you might not be having a fruit crop because the flowers are damaged because of cold. And in that case, it could be a little bit difficult to control the amount of fruit that you have, but you can do some good pruning to reduce some of those centers of growth where you might have a big concentration of flower. That way, you're trying to keep the tree in equilibrium and not having so many blossoms in one year and securing for next year, which doesn't mean that you might not keep experiencing the same problem just because of frost. Cherries tend to bloom really early on, so they're much more susceptible to frost damage than other fruit crops.
Okay, thanks, Al. Our next call is from Jim, and he's in Duluth. Jim, are you there?
Oh, hello. Hi. Oh, thank you very much. You guys read my mind as far as topic of the show. I have actually have two questions, but my main one is just on plums. I had some red oriental plum trees that I was not satisfied with. They weren't able to be canned, and they weren't very productive. But then I found the Mount Royal purple plums, I guess they're European, which were great, and they were able to be canned and water packed, and they were just super sweet and beautiful raw. And also, but they were blight susceptible. Is there another purple plum that's less blight susceptible and still, I live in northern Minnesota in Duluth where it does get quite cold. And my other question is there a source of just any variety of wild apple trees, please?
Okay, so regarding the plant varieties, from the top of my head, I don't know any varieties that are actually resistant to any of those blights. Probably the one that you are growing is the most successful one, and that's why you're saying that you're having such a good crop and good quality. What I would recommend is you're probably going to have to try to spray to control it. However, the University of Minnesota does have a pretty good extension website where you can find information regarding specific varieties from Minnesota that can be a little bit different from Wisconsin. Even though we're so close and we think we have the same climate, we do have some differences, and they are actually pretty significant regarding fruit crops. So I would recommend you to go there. We do have in our website as well some information on varieties. We do have a publication, an extension publication from University of Wisconsin Extension. It's called Fruit Crop Varieties for Northern Wisconsin, which will be more applicable for you. And there's a list there of European plums and also for Asian plums. So you can find some information there.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jim. Now let's go to Dawn in Wauwatosa.
Good morning. Thanks. I have a gooseberry bush that I've had for about 10 years, and I've also moved it to different positions, and it always sets what looks like it's going to be a lot of fruit, but then it drops all of the fruit at the pinhead stage and none of it matures, and I'm wondering what I can do so that it keeps some of its fruit.
So this one is a tricky question. So it could be probably water related. So I would check how's the vegetative growth, how much growth you have probably on your shoots, how do your leaves look, does it look like there's a lot of vegetation? If there is and it doesn't look sick, it might not be a water issue, but if it does look a little bit wilted, it might be maybe too much water or too little water. The other thing that I would check is the soil where you have it. If you have it on a soil that tends to be very heavy and a lot of clay, that could be affecting that as well. Because you already see some fruit, I would not consider that it's a pollination problem, but maybe putting another variety of gooseberries right next to it could increase and help keep some of that fruit, because you would have pollen from a different variety that always helps in fruit production. So those are the things that I would look at, unless you do have some specific symptoms that you can see that you would take some pictures and probably send, you know, to either in any of the specialists, and we can take a look at it. It's kind of difficult to diagnose those things without seeing any symptoms.
Right.
It's like going to the doctor and not being able to be
see
examined.
Anything. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. Oh, thank you for calling, Dawn. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today on Garden Talk. Thanks for joining us. I've been speaking with Amaya Atucha. She's a fruit crop specialist with the UW Extension, and we are so glad that you have joined us today. Hi, you're listening to Garden Talk. This is Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. We're talking about fruit today in Wisconsin, and we're taking your phone calls and your questions. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email at talk@wpr.org. And we'll go to our next call. We have Andrew from Waukesha.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. So I wanted to experiment with a soilless hydroponic system, and I was thinking either of grapes or blueberries. I wondered if you had the experience with either of those two crops hydroponically, or if you would recommend a different crop, and then if you could recommend maybe how to set it up, a system, a substrate, that kind of a thing.
Hi, Andrew. Well, first of all, I would let you know you want to make your life very complicated because it's not easy to grow fruit crops hydroponically. However, we do have an extension publication on growing blueberries hydroponically. So you can go to the UW Extension website and just look for it. And so you will find all the information there. Regarding grapes, very complicated because grapes are actually, they produce a lot of vegetative structure, and you need to have some way of training them. You need a support structure, so it's very difficult to grow. If you just want to grow them to have the vines growing there and not have any fruit, you could probably just get a rooted cut of grapes and just follow the same structures as blueberries. But I definitely would think it would be much more complicated than doing blueberries. So just go to the UW Extension website and find in the search box for growing blueberries hydroponically. We do have a publication on that.
What don't you guys have a publication on?
Well, I have to tell you, this is not my, I don't take any credits. This is a lot of the history of extension and a lot of my predecessors working on this. So I'm very grateful that we do actually have them.
It's such a font of knowledge. It's amazing. If you haven't checked it out, you really need to. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, we've talked about fruit trees, but what if I want to plant some fruit trees? What should I consider before I go out and buy those expensive trees?
Well, the first thing that we always talk about before planting any fruit tree is site selection. So finding a place in your backyard that, I would say the most important thing, it would be that it's not a low spot where you could have a lot of cold damage and probably more spring frost. So that's the first thing. Try to avoid lower spots within your yard.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second thing would be depending where you are in the state, we cannot grow everything. So a lot of people tell us, well, I want to grow apricots and I'm in northern Wisconsin, or I want to grow peaches. Well, that's why we don't have a peach industry, because
right.
It's really hard to grow those. So try to be realistic about the things that you can actually grow. So you can definitely grow everywhere in the states, apples, and you probably can grow pears as well, and berries during the summer. So strawberries, raspberries, blueberries. That is something that you can consistently propagate. It's going to be hard to try to grow peaches or sweet cherries. Those are the kind of fruit crops that you're going to get frustrated with. Obviously, things like subtropical things, unless you're growing them inside the house, impossible. So those would be probably the most important thing. And then do a little bit of research about the crop, especially if you are thinking about having apples. You know, you need to know that you need at least two varieties of apples, or you need to have a crab apple somewhere or around your neighborhood where you can get a source of pollen, because apples are incompatible. So the pollen that the pollen that is produced in the flower of that variety is not going to be compatible with those ovules, so you're never going to get an apple. So kind of those little things you need to know before you just buy a tree and you're like, I never got a crop out of it. That's probably why.
Or they die the next year.
Or they're not. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I would say that those are probably the most important thing. People tend to get a little bit more concerned about things like fertility problems and water problems. Yes, they are important. But if you choose the wrong site or the wrong cultivar, or you don't know things like you need several varieties to be able to have a crop, that is a major problem.
Right. All right, let's go back to the phones. Next up, we have Eshti, is that correct, in Madison?
Hi, thanks. So actually, I have two questions. One is, you talked earlier about picking smaller flowers, that you have only the biggest flower that will produce the biggest fruit. In my case, I was looking at the millions of flowers I had on my apple tree and my peach tree, and I was wondering about that, but I did not pick any fruit. I didn't know what to do. And so now I have the little fruits, and I wonder if I should pick the smaller ones and leave only one in a cluster to grow, or is it too late and that will just cause damage? And the second question is, last year, I actually, my peach tree is doing fantastically, but last year I lost about half the crop to bugs. And so this year I sprayed dormant oil late in winter, and then I didn't do it until it was too late, so I just sprayed the trunks and not the whole thing, and now I see ants on the trees, which I'm afraid means there will be bugs again. So if you have some suggestion, if there's anything that can still be done now organically to avoid a bug infestation. And thanks.
Regarding the first question about, I assume that you were talking about your apple trees. So in the case of the apple trees, yes, you can still go in there, remove the lateral flowers and keep the king flower. That would help reduce the amount of fruit that you're going to have this year. You're probably going to have bigger, better fruit because you have less fruits competing for the same amount of carbohydrates that the leaves are producing. And next year, you're going to have a better return bloom. So that means that you're going to have flowers as well, and you're going to have a good crop. You can definitely do that. In the case of the peaches, it's very similar. You can also thin the peaches. However, in Wisconsin, peaches tend to get thin naturally because it gets cold. And so I would wait a little bit in the case of the peaches to actually see that you have those fruits have been set and they are growing. If that's the case, congratulations. What I would do is you would want to leave one fruit about a distance of a fist or two fists within a branch. If your tree is very weak, don't leave too many fruits because the tree needs to put some of those reserves into the structure. So next year you're also going to be able to have a crop. If not, you're going to exhaust the tree. And it tends to happen on peaches because they can set a lot of fruit. So be careful not to be too greedy with the fruits this year so that you can have a crop next year. So you talked about having some insect problems. So the dormant spray, yes, can help. It does help when you apply it early on in the spring, because basically what it does, because this oil is taking away the oxygen and is producing this cover on the buds, and that helps control some of the insects. Again, I'm not an entomologist, so I will recommend you to go to our website. We also have, and this is called the Midwest Spray Guide. It's a spray guide that is put together by several states in the Midwest, where there's a list of products, conventional and organics, that you can find for different fruit crops. And they have the label, the instructions, the amount that you can apply, and you can find for almost everything, the same as with herbicides. But you need to be careful because you need to read whether they do have a label to be sprayed in Wisconsin and in the fruit crop that you want to spray them. So there's many regulations in terms of the products that we can use. So it's not that we can just apply anything anywhere. the products that we apply have to have a label in the state of Wisconsin and to have to be approved by that crop. So we might be able to apply certain products to control insects on apples, but we're not able to apply those same products on cranberries. Maybe in some states you can apply one product on cranberries, while in this state you cannot apply it. So you need to be careful when you are buying products, chemical products, whether they are organic or conventional, both of them have to have labels from Wisconsin and they have to have the crop in their label.
Great information. Thanks for the call. Up next, Bob in Amherst Junction. Bob, you there?
Hi. I have a small orchard that I put in about between 20 and 25 years ago. I put in all dwarf trees. And during the winter of, I think it was 2012, 2013, was really a bad winter. And a number of the trees actually had some damage on the bark. Well, that damage on those trees has grown every year to the extent that on some of the trees there are very large patches of where the bark is gone. I'm wondering, did something happen after what I thought was that frost damage? Is black rot a possibility? Do you know of any pattern like that that's occurring in Wisconsin?
So that year, I was not here in Wisconsin, but I've heard a lot about it. It was a very, very cold winter. So I assume that you said you just had a dwarf orchard. So I assume that you have apples. And probably what happens, and it happened in a commercial level as well to a lot of growers, is that because the temperatures were so extreme that winter, there was a lot of damage to the root systems. So it's something that we tend not to see that much. But we have a very... the layer of snow, it's the cover of snow, it's not much. What happens is that the soil tends to get cold much faster, the temperature drops much faster, and the roots get damaged. So some of the damage that you saw immediately after that winter, it was due probably to a lot of damage to the root system and to the trunk itself. Because those rootstocks that we use, some of those rootstocks, those dwarfing rootstocks that we've selected, they're great for controlling the size of the tree, but sometimes some of them might not be as cold hardy as what we need here in Wisconsin. And there's some lack of information in the literature in general about testing the hardiness of those rootstocks. However, there has been some information about the new rootstocks available for trying to identify some of those rootstocks that could work better for this kind of events. What I would recommend you to do is, if your tree is showing some effects, damage after that, is probably some pathogen that might have entered it through the wounds of the frosts, of the cold temperatures. So those tissues had damage, cold damage. Those tissues were had open wounds, and it's very easy for any pathogens to get in. So I would, if you have those trees with severe damage, I would just recommend you to replace those trees instead of trying to do any type of treatment to recover them. The best thing would be just to plant new trees.
Good luck on that, Bob. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Our guest is Amaya Tucha, and she is a fruit crop specialist at the UW Extension. Why don't you send us your questions or give us a call? What fruit crops grow well for you? Our telephone number is 1-800-642-1234, and you can send us an email. It's talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Jeremy and Racine, you're up next. You have a story for us.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I have a father-in-law. He's about 94 years old. He has a peach tree in the city of Racine. He lives in the Racine area here. He's had it for years. They just had a crop. It pushed out, not really pushed out, but produced fruits 2 years ago. And then last summer, they pruned it all down. And then this summer, it's going to produce again. He's had it for years, and he gets so many peaches, he has to literally prop up the branches to keep them from collapsing under the weight of the fruit that it's producing. So you can produce peaches quite abundantly. You're just not going to get it yearly, but you'll get it bi-yearly?
So, yes, there's some varieties that you can produce peaches in a homeowner. There's traditional varieties like Contender, Reliance, Intrepid, all of them. There's some new varieties coming out of Michigan. Some of you may have heard of the Paul Friday varieties, the Flaming Fury. All of those varieties actually do work. However, those old varieties tend not to have the characteristic of the varieties that we want on a commercial level. So that's why we cannot compete with those varieties with peaches that are coming out of Georgia, or they're coming out of California, or they're coming out of Colorado. I didn't mean that you could not grow peach trees. There are some, but you also telling me that your father-in-law is in the southern part of the state, which tends to have much better temperatures than if you're in the northern part of the state. You can absolutely have a peach tree in Door County. I'm sure that you will be able to have peaches. You can have cherries there. So it all depends on where you are in the state, and that is very important because that is actually what is going to determine what type of fruit crops you can grow.
Thanks, Jeremy. Speaking of peaches, Lenny emailed and said that he has a 3-year-old peach tree, and it has had fruit in the past, but the birds and the squirrels got to it. So this year, there are no leaves on the tree. It does have a few blossoms, and they see a lot of cardinals in the branches. Could they be eating the leaves?
I don't think that the birds would be eating the leaves. What I would check is whether you have any damage to the trunk due to rodents or any animal that could be maybe chewing on the bark, and you have some damage on the base of the tree. That could be affecting the vegetative growth on the tree. So just check on that.
Okay. Let's go to Molly in Milton.
Hello.
Hello, Molly.
Hi. So my question is regarding black raspberries. We have lived in our house for about 3 years, and we have a bunch of black raspberries, and they're starting to go into our neighbor's yard. So the question is, how do I trim those back, and what's the appropriate time? And also, is it better to leave them in the sun or in the shade?
So in regarding the blackberries, they obviously would like more sun than shade. Like any fruit crop, they need the sunlight to be able to produce photosynthesis through their leaves to be able to get those carbohydrates to the fruit and to the trees in general. What you can do about pruning is I would wait until the fall when you have those canes. So basically those green shoots that grow during the summer, they become canes. You see them, that they're brown by the fall, and then what you can do is that you can remove some of them, just thin them out, especially the ones that have produced a lot of fruit. You will see the reminiscence of where the fruit was, and so you can take those out and leave the ones that didn't have so much fruit or had not fruit for next year. That's the best way to prune them, just renew those old canes.
Okay, great, thanks. And we're going to go to Coulter in Cadott.
Cadott.
Hey, thank you. Three times a charm. What question do you have?
So actually fairly closely related to those black raspberries, I am trying the noble effort of growing blackberries up in the Chippewa Valley. And I know some folks who have done some work with it, but I've not seen a whole lot of documentation out there. In fact, I'm not even sure that it's recommended that far north. Do you have any particular advice on that end with blackberries?
So the problem with blackberries is that they're not very cold hardy. So that is the biggest constraint with growing blackberries. So what I would recommend, if possible, some kind of tunnel, high tunnel, some way to protect them would help them survive the winter. That's the only thing that I could think about that could help you. Regarding varieties, I don't know of any varieties of blackberries that are actually hard enough for the northern part of Wisconsin. You might be able to find some information from Minnesota or Michigan that they could have some new varieties, though the breeding programs there, I don't know, I might be wrong, that they are working on blackberries. So yes, the biggest problem with the blackberries would be surviving the winter. They're cold sensitive compared with the red raspberries that are much more resistant. So any way that you can protect them, if you can build some little tunnel where you can cover them, that would definitely help you have a consistent yield every year. Not secure, but it will help you.
Great. Thanks for the call, Coulter. And we're talking about, you talked about hoop houses a little bit, Amaya. Peggy from Fort Atkinson emailed, and she said they're planning to grow dwarf peaches and sweet cherries under a hoop house to protect them from the late frost and cold winters. Now, the hoop house she has is movable. Is it advisable to move it off the trees for the summer? And she asked if there's any other hints for hoop house growing of fruit trees.
Yes, it is advisable that you move them. It will help. It can get pretty warm in there, so you don't want to stress your trees in the middle of the summer, unless you want to keep that on and you can open the sides so that you can get some wind. That would help. But the other thing that it would help, if you keep it and you're able to get enough air circulation during the summer so it doesn't get that hot, it would help if you have any rain, because that would preserve your cherries. You wouldn't have any crack on your fruit, so that would be good. And regarding growing fruit on high tunnels, we do have some information on our website. So just visit our website. We have some information there. They do grow in a more commercial level in Washington State. In Washington State, they do have, but I don't think that would be applicable for a homeowner.
Because those are pretty darn big, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes, we're trees. Okay, well, let's go to Gail, and she's in Wazeku?
Wazeka,
thank you. I'm not from Wisconsin, so please forgive me. What's your question?
My husband and I planted a bunch of fruit trees 3 years ago, and the cherry tree did not make it. And it was guaranteed with where we bought it from, so they replaced it, and we buried another, you know, planted another one following the directions, and that one did not make it either. But the peach tree, everything else that we planted at that time was fine. So I was wondering if there was something that I am doing wrong or something that I could do better.
So it could be that you might have some soil condition that might be affecting. Because when you buy a new tree, the first thing that you want is that tree, when it starts growing and breaks and produces new leaves, is that it helps produce new roots so that the tree can actually establish properly in the site. So maybe looking at the type of soil that you have, maybe a very heavy type of soil, if you want to mix it with, you know, some commercial, the same things that you would use for your pots, you can mix the original soil with that to make it not so dense. That will help. And keeping up the irrigation. The other thing that could have happened is, excuse me, the way that you handle the tree when you got it from the nursery, maybe the roots got very dry, and that's a possibility that could have damaged the tree, and that's why the tree didn't make it. So the way that you're handling that tree, try to keep those roots moist with moist towels and try to keep it in a cool place before you plant it.
Great. Thanks, Gail. Appreciate the call. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today. And we have a few open lines, so give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, we'll be talking about organic farming, biodiversity, renewable energy, and farm-to-table pizza. Yep, that's right, pizza. Sounds great. Hope you can join us. Today, our guest is Amaya Adtucha. She is a fruit crop specialist at the UW Extension, and we're talking about the fruit crops that we have here in Wisconsin. And we've got a lot of calls, so let's go to the first one. Martha from Dodgeville.
Hi. I had actually called to tell you about my lemon tree that I've raised for about 5 years. It had blooms last year, but I took it outdoors too soon and lost the blooms. But this year, I've noticed over the winter what I call scale on the underneath the leaves that caused the leaves to get really sticky. And if you taste the flavor of it, it's sweet. So they are insects rather than just, I thought there was just scales, but they are insects. So I don't know what it is. I want to know how to treat it, if you probably can give me an idea of what I'm looking at.
So as I said before, unfortunately, I'm not an entomologist, so I don't know about so much about the pests. What has worked in the past in the case of lemon trees, you can dissolve one drop of your dish detergent in about 1 gallon, 2 gallons of water and spray that. That will help control some of the problems that you have.
Okay. That sounds like a pretty easy fix, Martha. Good luck. Next up, we have Mark, and he's in Ladysmith. What do you have for us, Mark?
Yeah, I've got a couple of pear trees that I planted about 6 or 7 years ago. They've never produced fruit. The last couple of years, I've had just a very few blossoms on each tree, anywhere from 5 to 8 or so. That's all. This year, both trees had pretty full blossoms on it, but we're still wondering if we're going to get fruit. We have two trees that are the same variety.
That's your problem. You need to put a different variety. So get yourself another variety of pears, and you'll have fruit.
Pretty simple, Mark. Okay, thank you very much for calling. We'll go to Lynn next in Eau Claire. Lynn, what do you have?
Good morning. I have an answer to the person from Kadat about blackberries. I grow blackberries, and I buy them at a local farm, Klinger's Market up in Chippewa Falls. What they sell, they often grow. So it will grow in our area. And the Kadat Eau Claire area is about 100 miles east of Minneapolis. We're not extremely far north. You know, it's touch and go as to, you know, zone four, you know, 3 or 4 actually. But I would suggest always to purchase your plants where they've been grown. That's all.
Excellent. Thank you for the information. We always learn new things. I wish I could know everything, but I don't. That's for sure.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Bob from Lancaster, you're up next.
Good morning. I was calling. I've got beginnings of fire blight on one of my apple trees, and I'm wondering, the book says to just amputate where it is and hope for the best. I wonder, is there something like bleach solution or hydrogen peroxide or other kinds of human-type antiseptic that one could apply? Maybe put a little score the bark vertically and try and infiltrate the antiseptic to get the bacteria?
Well, there isn't, unfortunately. As I said, I'm not a pathologist. Fire blight, you said it, is a bacteria, and removing the tissue would be one way. Another way would be to try to find a variety that might be resistant. So there's a number of, there's some apple varieties that are resistant to fire blight. So you can check some of our publications on our website where we have listed some varieties there. Regarding a product that you can apply, nothing like bleach or anything of that would work. Actually, you could end up harming the tree. So there are some treatments, and again, I'm not the pathologist, so I'm just giving some general information here that you could apply, like antibiotics, but really I would not recommend you going that way. I think that the best solution would try to find a variety of apples that is resistant, if that's a problem that you have often.
Okay. We just got an email from Sherry in Green Bay. They planted a Stella cherry tree 2 years ago, and the buds began to open a few weeks ago, but as of today, they still have not opened. Should they be worried, or is it just really slow to blossom?
It could be related with weather. In general, if the weather has been a little bit colder, it could have slowed down the process of development. But I would also check, again, I think I said that to some other person that had a question about it, the base of the tree to see if you don't have any damage to either, you know, you have mice or anything that could be damaging the bark, or you might have some insect. So that could be something that you want to look and just dig a little bit and look a little bit at the base of the tree and look at the root system to check if you have anything there. Also, if you have only one variety of cherries, you are not going to get a crop. So you need two different varieties of sweet cherries.
Okay, great. We are going to go to Nino in Sheboygan. Hi, Nino.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Go right ahead.
I have a question. I would like to plant some pear trees in my backyard and some plum trees also. Now, I'm wondering, do they have to be planted in pairs because of the pollination? And how far apart should I plant the trees? I'll take my answer on the end.
So in the case of the pears, yes, you do have to plant two varieties of pears. In the case of the plums, if you have European plums, you can just, they will self-pollinate, so that would be fine. And regarding the distance, it's all going to depend on what type of management you're going to do to the trees. So if you are planning on just let these trees grow and you're not going to prune them that much, well, you probably can imagine how big a pear tree can get, and they're very vigorous. So it will depend on how much you are going to be willing and investing on training those trees. But as I said, and the space that you have. But and the other thing is that unfortunately for pears and for plums, we don't have dwarfing rootstocks like we do have for apples. So that's my short answer.
You're listening to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. We do have a few open lines for our guest, who's Amaya Atucha. She's a fruits crop specialist at UW Extension. Why don't you give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email. It's talk at wpr.org. And all this information that you've been giving us, a lot of it is available on your website, right?
Yes.
And what's that address again?
It's fruit.wisc.edu.
All right. So all these questions, if you didn't get your exact answer, please make sure to check that out. Steve in Boulder Junction, what's your question?
Hi, I'm going to be planting some fruit trees that I want to train on the wires in the espalier fashion. And I'm wondering where there's a source for true dwarf bare root apple trees. I can find semi-dwarfs, but nobody seems to have dwarf. And I'm also wondering what other types of fruit crops come on dwarf or semi-dwarf rootstock.
So for dwarfing rootstocks, it's mainly apples. We don't have a lot of other rootstocks. There are some rootstocks for sweet cherries that also produce smaller trees. Regarding nurseries, I'm sure that you can go online and find a number of nurseries here in Wisconsin. I try not to give names of nurseries in particular because we don't endorse any business, but if you go online, we also have some listed on our website. There's a publication that was put some years ago for everybody that's listening regarding varieties. It's called fruit tree varieties from northern Wisconsin, and there's one for southern Wisconsin. They are in the UW Extension website. We also have them on our website, and they actually do have a list of nurseries there, so I would recommend you go there and check. You would probably find some good nurseries in Wisconsin, but also in Minnesota. I would assume that you are going to be able to find some apple nurseries where you can get some of these varieties. So in the case of dwarfing, you will probably want to plant something in a butt 9 that would give you a smaller tree, or M9. But 9 tends to be a little bit more gold hardy. And there's a bunch of new rootstocks that have come out of the Geneva Station in New York State. They're called the Geneva rootstocks, and they also have very small dwarfing rootstocks, and they have semi-dwarfing as well. Those are in very high demand, and it's very difficult to get them even in a commercial level. So I would recommend you to try to go with a bud 9. It's probably more available.
Okay, good luck, Steve. That sounds like quite the ambitious project. We've got someone from Madison who wrote on Facebook that they're removing a dying, large, beautiful crab tree from their yard, and they'd like to replace it with a native fruit tree. They already have service berries, elderberry, high bush cranberry, and they're soon going to have an American plum. Can you recommend a native replacement that will be attractive to humans and wildlife?
Oh, I wish I could. I have to confess that I'm, as you can all tell, not native from Wisconsin, and I just moved here a year and a half ago. So, and my specialty is fruit crops. So what I would do is look on the Extension website. for the specialists that might be more related with ornamentals and that could give you some ideas of what you can use for replacement. I'm sorry that I cannot answer your question a better way.
Absolutely. Okay. I think we're going to go to Steve in Boulder Junction. Oh, actually, we already had him. Kyle in Dunn. Oh, you have black walnut trees. I feel your pain. What's your question?
Yeah.
What's
your question? So I have a brand. I just bought a house, and there's like a 15-foot black walnut tree. Kind of, you know, not too big, but I'd like to plant an orchard back there, and I don't know how far or what to plant back there. I mean, I'm open to peaches or pears or apples. I just don't want my effort to go, wasted. So just wondering what I could plant around that or...
Any chance, Amaya, that you're...
No, not really. You really need to be far away. Some of those of that substance just gets infiltrated in the soil and just is what we call allelopathic. It doesn't let anything grow where there's that. The only thing that I would recommend you is remove that tree if you can and maybe plant some grass, some ground cover, anything that could grow and may be able to uptake some of those chemicals and they bring some life back to that soil. But I would not try to plant any orchards there.
And learn to love black walnuts. Okay, thank you so much, Amaya. We really appreciate you being on today. And thank you for joining us. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. I want to remind you that we are going to have an open house next Saturday here at our Madison offices, and we'd love to have you come. You can meet some of our staff, tour the studios, and more. And I've been hearing that there's actually some free ice cream involved in it. I know Larry will be here, and I'm going to be here. And lots of the people that you hear on the air, we're going to be here. So please stay with us. There's a lot more to come on the Ideas Network. Next Monday at this time, we're going to be talking to the author of a book called After the Civil War. And then at 11:45, we'll learn to explore. You'll learn how to explore your family history. And I know we're all interested in that. So thank you so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about fruit crops today on Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Our guest today is Amaya Atucha. She is a UW Extension fruit crop production specialist and assistant professor of horticulture at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. What questions do you have about fruit crops? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email at talk@wpr.org. And of course, you can post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Our lines actually are, there's a couple open, so please give us a call. Amaya, you know, we had this really late, harder frost not too long ago. How has that affected our fruit crops here?
So it affected, it depends on where you are in the state. The northern part of the state, everything was a little bit more delayed because, you know, the weather tends to be cooler in the spring. So maybe some of the fruit trees and the grapes were not as advanced as in the southern part of the state. We saw some damage to grapes, as a lot of people have seen the news, and the big Wollersheim winery said that they had a lot of damage.
Yes.
However, I want to highlight that that is very has been very site-specific. So within a vineyard, for example, you have areas in lower spots where you can have a lot of damage, but other areas where the vines are doing just fine. The same whether you are in the southern part of the states or in the northern part of the states. Even between the east and west, most of the damage we saw in the western part of the state. So it's been very localized. We saw damage on apples as well, and very similar patterns. Some blocks within an orchard had a lot of damage because the fruit or the trees were in a more advanced stage, so more sensitive to cold, especially full bloom. The flowers are the most sensitive organs. If you were past that and they had fruit that was already set, that tends to be able to resist a little bit lower temperatures. So at this point, we're still assessing the damage, and it's all going to depend on what the growers are going to do. So I try not to be catastrophic about it. It's not that we're not going to have any fruit this year, not at all. But there might be some orchards and some vineyards that had some damage, and I'm sure that they are trying to find a way to, you know, compensate for that.
Great.
Well, also berries. I have to say some berries also had some damage. We were up yesterday by Eau Claire, had a field day with the berry growers, and some of the berry growers, so them, they had some damage on their blueberries. But as I said, it's very localized, and it's not all the varieties and not all the fruit crops.
Well, we hope that they'll be able to recover quite well on that one. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Dennis in River Falls. Hi, Dennis.
Oh, yes. Hi, everybody, and thanks for the information. I just got a question regarding wild plums. It was about, I think, about 8 years ago I transplanted some wild plums from an area that was being bulldozed. And anyway, now in about a 20-by-20-foot area, I've got about 4 established trees that kick out some plums, and the bees are really happy and everything. But I wonder, I get a lot of shoots. There must be, you know, each year there's about 10, 15, 20 shoots coming up, and I mean, that's got potential just to be a real crowded area. I'm wondering long-term how I might be taking care of those. And that's my question.
Well, some of the things that you can do is during the winter pruning is remove from the base completely those water sprouts, I would call it, that usually grow in the center of the canopy and, as you said, tend to block a lot of the light. So you can remove them completely. We usually recommend to do this either during the winter. And as I said, the most important thing is to remove them all the way to the base. Don't head them. That means do not remove 1/3 of the final portion of the branch. That is going to encourage even more growth. So just take them from the base. The other thing that you can do is while they're growing during the summer, you can pull them down. If there's any way, you can put a weight or you can tie them down. That is going to slow the growth and is going to help them produce some flowers the following years. And once you have the fruit growing on those shoots, what's going to happen is that the fruit is going to compete for some of this vigor and is going to control this vegetative growth. The fruit is always the best way to control any vegetative growth. But if that's not the case, you can just remove them while they're growing during the summer from the very base as well. It's easier to do during the winter because you can actually see all of them. But any way that you can tie them down and slow their growth to promote flowers on those shoots the following year is going to help you. Also, if the interior of the canopy is getting very crowded and it's very dense, you don't have a lot of light, that is going to produce less flowers inside of the canopy, so you don't want that. So every winter, just remove maybe 1 or 2 big branches inside of the canopy to make sure that you have enough light to promote flowers for the following years. That's where you're going to be able to control growth overall.
Great. Thanks, Dennis, for the call. Let's go to Green Bay. Chad, you have a question?
Yeah, I was wondering about pawpaw trees and how likely I'd be able to get fruit from them if I planted them in Green Bay.
Well, Chad, I can tell you personally that I have too many pawpaw trees in my yard. Now, I live near Madison, but I can't get them to fruit at all. I get flowers, nothing. So, Amaya, you know, you got help for me, too.
Well, regarding the area, Green Bay, I actually don't have a good answer for you. I don't know. My only experience with pawpaws, not being from America, I learned about it up in New York State when I was a grad student there, and they did grow very well there. Of course, the weather is not as harsh as in up in Green Bay, but you could probably try a couple, and what I would recommend you and Jill is to at least have 2 varieties so that they can cross-pollinate. That would be the a successful way to get some fruit, but just try different, you know, varieties, maybe 3 varieties, and see how they develop. I really don't have an answer regarding whether they would survive the winter or not.
And Chad, I have to tell you that they are pretty invasive. They grow underground. Their root systems spread, so make sure you have a lot of space unless you want to keep, you know, going through them and cutting them down all the time. So good luck with that. Let's go to Lake Geneva. Sharon, you have a question? Sharon, are you there? I think Sharon is not there. Well, while we're waiting to see if Sharon comes back, you know, we've been doing something new here in Wisconsin. We're talking, we're growing hazelnuts. Now, that's underneath the fruit crop
part of the UW Extension. What can you tell us about the hazelnuts?
Well, I have not really been much involved with the hazelnut. I know that there's an initiative and there's some people working on it at UW Extension. So if you want to find some information, we do have contacts on our website where you can find some information about hazelnut. I have not really been involved, but yes, of course, they are a fruit crop. There's great promise, and I know that there's very good research going on, and they've been testing many varieties. So there is information. Go to our website and you will find contact information for people working on hazelnuts.
Are those mostly up north, or would they grow?
Yes, okay. Up north mostly, mm-hmm. in the Bayfield area.
Okay, great. Let's go to Norman in Wausau. Hi, Norman.
How are you? I have a question. I have tried to grow an improved Meyer lemon for about 5 years, and every time they last a year or two. And over the winter and into the spring, they just die. The leaves fall off and so forth. I'm on my last plant now, and it keeps flowering, but it hasn't had any leaves for about 3 months now. In other words, the leaves gradually turn yellow and fell off. And I do have another citrus called a pomelo that somebody gave me, and that thing's growing like a weed right next to it. It's grown in the last month and a half. It must have grown almost a foot and a half. With big, beautiful leaves, and I'm not doing anything different. So I'm wondering, are people having success with that improved Meyer lemon, or is there something about that dwarfing rootstock they're using or something about it that makes it almost impossible to grow long-term in a household? We put them out in the summer usually and then take them in the fall before it gets too cold, and I try not to overwater it. I try not to underwater it. But the fact that these other plants I've got, citrus trees, are growing good makes me wonder what is wrong with the improved Meyer lemon. Do you know anything about it?
What do you think, Amaya?
Well, if you're growing in a pot, I would wonder how big of a pot that is, whether you might be constraining a lot of the roots. It could be one thing. I'm curious about the fact that you don't have leaves. I would wonder whether you have an early drop of the leaves. But being an evergreen tree, you should have leaves all year long. Not enough sunlight, that could be something. It's very tricky to try to grow these fruit trees inside the house. I would start by just looking at the root system and maybe transplant it into a bigger pot. That could be one thing. If I don't see it, it's kind of really difficult to give you a diagnosis of what it could be. But, of course, things to rule out. Is there any disease? Do you have any pest? How do the roots look if you just dig around the pot? Do they look healthy or do they look brown or red? That could be an indication of whether they're too dry or too wet. I know that you're taking, you're looking at that, but that could be something. I don't think that any nutritional deficiency would actually defoliate your trees at all. Usually when you see something as extreme as that, it tends to be more related with water. So, but of course, I would just make sure that you don't have any symptoms of diseases or insect problems.
It's too bad Larry's not here. I believe he does have a citrus tree. I think it's a lemon, and it's been doing well for quite some time. But good luck with that, Norman. We do have some open lines, so please give us a call. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. And you can send us an email, too. That's at talk@wpr.org. Joe in Rhinelander, you have something for us?
Yeah, just a quick question about transplanting a semi-dwarf apple tree. I've got three apple trees in a row on the north side of the lake, and the apple tree on the farthest east side has a lot of branching. The middle one has some branching. The right-hand one, the one on the west side, has less branching. It does get more shade. Could a person still transplant a tree like that? And if you could, when would be the best time to do that?
Oh, that's a good question. Never experienced transplanting an apple tree. It would all depend on how big the tree is. You know, the younger the tree, maybe the easier. You will have a lot of damage because you're not going to be able to take all of the roots. But the first thing would be to try, if possible, to collect as much as possible of the root system. So the bigger the mass of the root system, the bigger success you're going to have of that tree being able to establish and survive in the new site. That's my recommendation. In terms of the time, it could be a good idea maybe to do it during the fall, so it's not actively growing. That could be one possibility. But the truth is, I don't have ever had any experience with transplanting a really big tree. If it's a small tree, it's a relatively new tree, it should not be so much of a problem. And make sure that the new site where you're establishing the tree has, you know, good prepared soil with those roots that are going to go through a little bit of stress, are going to be able to reestablish.
Okay. All right, let's go to Linda in Ashland. Linda?
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have a second or third year black raspberry crop in my backyard home garden. And the same thing happened last year that is happening at this time this year, that some of the primocanes are wilting. I've looked for the girdling that I've seen on some publications, and those canes do not have it. So I don't know if it's the cane maggot or if I should just cut them off below the wilting as I did last year.
So pruning them is not going to change the problem. What you need to find is what is making those primocanes wilt. And usually when we see that kind of symptoms, it's related with either excess of water or lack of water, because the plant cannot keep up transpiration, so they tend to, you know, wilt, whether it's too warm or there's too much water in the soil and there's not enough oxygen. So I would look and see whether you might have the soil there, it's just too damp and there's too much water, or whether it's too dry. That would be my first thing to look at before I start looking at any disease or insects, just to make sure that they have adequate moisture, because that seems to be a symptom very much related with soil and with water.
Okay, great. Good luck there, Linda. Thanks for the call. We've got Bobby in La Crosse next. Bobby, what's your question?
We were affected by that frost, and my little cherry tree that did have fruit on it got little, you know, they turned to raisins, and so I'm not going to get any cherries. But I have a raspberry patch, and they were in bud when the frost happened, and I'm just waiting for a good day to see if any pollinators come by and actually think that those are viable flowers. But what can you tell me about the prospects for my raspberries?
Well, much better than for your cherries, that's for sure. Because they are later on and they're going to keep producing some blossoms during, you know, the growing season, you will for sure have a crop. So don't worry about that, especially if you're telling me that they were not very advanced, so probably the damage was not as bad. You can look at the leaves. If you see some, you know, damage to the leaves, it could be an indicator that there might be some damage to the blossoms, but there's nothing else to do but just wait and hope that you're going to have a crop.
Okay. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Our guest is Amaya Atucha. She's a fruit crop specialist with the UW and UW Extension, and we're talking about fruit crops today. If you have any questions, please give us a call. The number is 1-800-648-1234. You can also send us an email. That's talk@wpr.org. We've got a question from Mary in Appleton. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I have a creek in our backyard, and in the spring it overflows, and so some of those trees get kind of wet. And I probably have too much moisture that time of the year. So I've already lost an apple tree, a plum tree, and all of my raspberries. Is there anything that might work back there?
Oh, you know, in general, fruit trees don't like to have wet feet. So what I would recommend you maybe is to, in that area, if you want to have some fruit trees, is to build a little berm or like a raised bed where you can have some volume of soil, a bigger volume of soil where you don't have a lot of moisture, so that the tree can establish the roots in that volume of soil. That could be one alternative. You can build, you know, a berm or a raised bed as tall as 2 to 3 feet if you're willing to do that, and you will be able to grow a fruit tree there.
Okay. Next, we have Matt in Elm Grove. Hi, Matt.
Hi. My wife and I used to do some vegetable gardening, and we've never tried any fruit gardening before, but we now also have a two-year-old in our life, and so I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for crops we could try that would be low maintenance or even no maintenance, if that's a thing.
Well, the challenge with growing fruit crops in Wisconsin is, well, of course, it's cold, but also there's a high pressure of disease and insects. So that is challenging because you always have to do some maintenance. But some crops that work well are, of course, apple trees. People tend to grow very successful apple trees. But as ever, anything, you will need to prune them eventually. If you have things that are not such a long investment like a tree, but you have maybe strawberries or you have raspberries, it might require work during the growing season, but then you can break some of the cycles of the diseases because you have the winter. And during the winter, you can prune some of those canes in the case of the raspberries, so that might help. But there's not one in particular that I could recommend that doesn't require anything. It's not like vegetables in which you're growing during the summer and you're done in the fall and then you clean up and you start them again. That's a problem that you have with fruit crops, that they're perennial and you need to take care of them. It's not that you can just, you know, forget about them because you won't get any crop and you're going to get a lot of disease and insects. So unfortunately, I don't have a good answer for your question.
Well, good luck, Matt. I hope you find some that work for you. You know, speaking of actually planting those trees, so you talked earlier about we found the perfect location for our trees. What's the next step then? How do we know we're going to get good tree stock? I mean, what do we look for when we go to the gardening shop?
So one of the things is, of course, to go to a good nursery where you can get trees or plant material that is certified, that doesn't have any diseases, any viruses. So that is the first thing. Just if you are, a lot of people call me and said, oh, I have this, or a family member has this apple tree and I want to propagate it and I want to graft it. Well, I usually recommend try to buy good plant material. If you start with a healthy, good tree, you are going to be so much more successful than if you buy or try to propagate it yourself, unless you are an expert and have a lot of experience with it. So that's the first thing. Another thing is the roots. The roots of the tree, the bigger the roots system, the healthier the roots, the higher success you're going to have establishing that tree. So that is something. And as I said to one of the people that were calling today, is that you want to take care of that tree until you really actually plant it in the site that you have designated. So if you're bringing a bare root tree, just make sure that you keep those roots moist and you keep the tree in a cool place. So that is something that is definitely going to help. Once you establish them, I always recommend them, make a planting hole big enough to put all of the roots, because you don't want to have to remove any of those roots, because what you want is to have more of them. So big enough. And then the other thing is provide enough irrigation the minute you plant them. So you plant them, you put back that soil and put a lot of water so that there's a good contact between the root system and the soil. That is definitely going to help the trees.
And we have to worry about the water, I'm assuming, all season long?
Absolutely. You need to keep irrigating every season long. But be careful. People tend to over-irrigate, and over-irrigating is also a problem. So the roots not only absorb the water, but they need to breathe. So if you are putting too much water, you're saturating that soil with water, there's not going to be any oxygen.
Great. Thank you so much for all your information, Amaya. Way more than I can even comprehend at this point. Just remember, if you want more information, you go to your website, which is
fruit.wisc.edu. You can sign up for the newsletter there as well.
All right, great. Thank you so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. This is Jill Nadeau sitting in for Larry Mueller. Remember, on Monday, we're going to be talking to the author of the book After the Civil War. And then at 11:45, we'll learn how to explore your family history. I hope you can join us. Thank you.